We'll call the meeting to order. Good morning, everyone. First thing is we need a motion and second for approval of the minutes of the meeting of April 12th, 2017.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you. And next on our agenda is the executive director's report. So, Bill.
Thank you very much. For those of you who are not regular attendees, I would just say that the executive director's report is actually a formal document that is sent to the commission as a part of the packet, which is also a public record. And I just typically take advantage of this opportunity to make a few comments about various goings on here at the port over the course of the last month. First, I would just mention that we're live streaming the commission meeting, and that link is available to you or to anyone else who would like to watch. The port's monthly safety champions are being previewed on the screens around us here. And I'd also say, as a reminder, on the back table, you'll find an evacuation map. In the event of an emergency, port staff will escort everyone from the room through the doors, down the hall to stairwell one, and out to the gathering area next to the north lot, which is across the street from the central utility plant, which is straight out that window. And I'd like to call on Stan Waters right now for this month's safety message. Stan?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. This month, I thought I would talk about a very important safety leadership roundtable event that we're going to hold on May 24th. We've hired Caterpillar Safety Services to facilitate an on-site leadership roundtable for the port's executive team, safety department, and many of the key leaders within the port who play a critical role in implementing our safety programs. The purpose of the event is to introduce key decision makers to successful principles and strategies necessary to develop a safety culture that relentlessly pursues a goal of zero injuries. The Leadership Roundtable introduces fundamental principles and leading safety performance and presents strategies to establish a safety environment that is committed to eliminating risk by championing preventative safety actions and accountabilities. The training overview will include safety visioning through the six criteria for safety excellence, establishing a mission that recognizes safety performance as an integral part of our operations, creating an environment that values safety and desired behaviors, focusing on tasks that are consistent with the leadership journey, how to assess the current health of our safety culture, defining, training, measuring, and recognizing a system of safety accountability, and applying the tools to initiate the process of change. The overall goals for this workshop are to further our culture change strategy, establishing long-term adherence to safety accountabilities, and developing a shared visible leadership commitment and vision where the leaders of the organization are modeling the behaviors that we seek to achieve in the entire organization. Bill, that's my safety message.
Dan, thank you very much. On April 28th, Business Oregon and the Port hosted trade and logistics stakeholders meeting with about 80 shippers and service providers in Aurora, Oregon, and provided updates on Terminal 6 lease termination and the business strategy opportunity to support Pacific Northwest shippers. It was a very successful session. This has been going on for some time. Our thanks to the governor for having created this forum. And these are people who are going to be very, very important to us as the port, as we plot the future of Terminal 6. The HIO master plan is well underway. The Planning Advisory Committee had its second meeting on May 4th. Larger planning is underway for the investment of resources over the course of the next 20 years, involving the community and coordinating with other governments and groups in Washington County. Our team presented an overview of airport futures to the City of Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission yesterday, coordinating with both the cities of Portland and Vancouver to keep the sponsors of the effort informed as to PDX growth, infrastructure development, environmental and community engagement topics. The Oregon Consular Corps event, Celebrate Trade, is scheduled for Monday, May 15th as the official kickoff to International Trade Week in Oregon. The event celebrates our globally focused businesses and entrepreneurs, as well as those individuals who help strengthen our ties to the rest of the world. Here at the airport, Tender Loving Empire is now on Concourse D. TLE is a record label and marketplace for handmade goods that support our independent artists. The new PDX location carries a specially curated selection of handmade gifts, apparel, music, food, and beverages, including its own signature line of products. On May 26th, Delta inaugurates its flight to London. I would just say take advantage of the strong dollar. Book your flight soon. The early bookings for this service look very, very strong, which is great. And finally, the triennial emergency exercise is scheduled for May 23rd. This is an activity that we do, as implied by triennial, every 3 years to simulate emergencies that can be caused by any variety of circumstances here at the airport. We involve all of our partners from around the region, and it's a very important and typically very successful exercise. So we look forward to that. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Motion and second to approve the executive director report. Second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Vince, the general discussion item is next, the advisory committee annual report.
So good morning. I have Jeff Owen with me. From the Community Advisory Committee. And in the fall of 2011, the Port of Portland, the City of Portland, and the City of Vancouver created the Community Advisory Committee. And this diverse regional committee was a recommendation of our Airport Futures Plan District and our PDX Master Plan, which was approved in April of 2011. It's a 30-member Community Advisory Committee, which has 20 voting members and 10 ex officios. We held our first meeting in January 2012, and we continue to meet every quarter. So we've now completed our fourth full year of service. The mission of this advisory committee is to support meaningful, collaborative public dialogue and engagement on airport-related planning and development. We provide an opportunity for the community to inform the decision-making of the jurisdictions and organizations related to the airport, and we raise public knowledge about the airport. A key focus of the committee is sustainability and recognition of the long-term critical interconnection between economic development, environmental stewardship, and social responsibility. I sit on the committee, and I've really enjoyed the opportunity to listen to all of the region stakeholders, get their ideas and feedback about the airport. It's really a good opportunity for us to enhance our relationship with the community, particularly those closest to the airport that are impacted the most by airport operations. It's also a great opportunity to partner with the City of Portland and the City of Vancouver on areas of mutual interest. In addition to our quarterly meetings, a lot of our members have participated in other port efforts, including PDX concession selections, our natural resource program recommendations on the Columbia River SLU watershed, and letters of support for groups like Verde and others in North Portland. I have with me Jeff Owen. We also have two other members in the audience, Chad Eichen and Joe Smith. You could raise your hand.
Morning.
And really thank them for their participation. Jeff is the chair of the PDX CAC, and he's attended many of our coordination meetings in addition to the quarterly CAC. He's a senior planner at TriMet, and he's our committee's alternative transportation representative. We had Jennifer Party also from the Oregon Air National Guard, is the vice chair. She was supposed to be here, but is feeling ill today, so wasn't able to make it. But we really appreciate having her involvement, again, being across the field and the impact that the Air National Guard has on the airport operations. She's been a great asset to us, and really want to thank her for her participation as well. So I'm going to let Jeff do his report. So take it away.
Great. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here and spend just a few minutes at the start of your meeting to highlight just a few elements that we focus on as a CAC.
Left side.
We, as a committee, as Vince mentioned, we exist to really support meaningful dialogue. And that is something that we definitely have at this committee. We have honest, great feedback. And I really want to thank the port staff for providing just the right amount of background and context on a various range of issues so that the CAC as a group can have meaningful and timely feedback for the airport. As Vince mentioned, we have 20 voting members total, 10 ex officio. My role naturally brings with it a lens of transit and accessibility, walking and biking, and that's very similar to all of the committee members that bring with them expertise and interest in various areas so that we can really come together as a group with a wide range of input and knowledge. Just a few key accomplishments to share with you today. First of which being the recent award to the committee from the state of Oregon for the STAR Award, which recognizes best examples of citizen involvement in land use planning. The committee is very proud for this award and really credits the great work of the committee in making the discussion valuable. One of the important things we do in the CAC is to give input and discuss emerging issues at and near PDX. For example, this includes the Port Small Business Program, the long-range forecast for PDX, and how the airport is tracking that, the long-range plan for redevelopment of the north side of airport property, and plans for significant changes in the terminal balancing project. But the port is not the only one giving updates in our group. We also have a roundtable where all committee members can share updates from their neighborhoods, from their perspectives of anything that affects the airport. And it's a really great place for community dialogue. Under the plan district for PDX, instituted by Airport Futures, projects of a certain size and cost are required to be described to the public. Via broad public notice, and those projects are brought to the CAC to seek input from our various community members who are represented there. So we reviewed many projects this past year, including the Northside Redevelopment General Aviation Project, and there's a lot of interest in these projects. Again, this is not just a committee that checks the box. We really do engage in meaningful debate and discussion with the staff and many experts. CAC members were also invited to the port's annual business meeting, Gateway to the Globe, which I've had the pleasure to attend for a few years now, and as well as the opening of Atlantic Aviation's facility. One of the things the CAC also does is to help recommend funding for the Columbia Slough Enhancement and Urban Tree Canopy projects each year. This year, we voted to fund Friends of Trees for three-year, multi-year tree plantings in a variety of neighborhoods that are impacted by airport activities. For Columbia Slough Enhancement, we voted to fund a three-year project that focuses on improvements already made in the slough and monitors those benefits. And even though I consider myself an expert in PDX concessions, one member of our group, who is a trained chef, was able to participate on the panel to select the PDX concessions. So my interest in eating alone is not enough for that, but we've really had different chances to get involved as a committee. We have selected just a few samples here in the screen that we've had substantive discussion on, including the Air National Guard developments, small business program, natural resources, seismic activity, environmental, stormwater, PDX Next. And our group also takes a strong interest in social equity, and that'll be something that we care about going forward into the future as well. As we alluded to, we have four quarterly meetings. As a coordinating committee, we have a meeting on the front end of each one of those and on the back end to help set the agendas, talk about what works well, and if we're engaging the public in a true and honest and transparent way. So these are proving very productive and efficient meetings so that we can really make sure that the right projects that are required for public notice obviously come to the CAC, but also other projects that are of great interest to the committee. In addition, we are very happy that recently one of our members, Mary Helen Kincaid, was awarded the Compass Award, recognizing her significant involvement over many years. We also welcome and orient 6 new committee members this past year, and as well as exchanging a lot of information over email and invitations and some ad hoc committees as well for other items. So with that, I just wanted to give one last plug for the port staff who's involved in this committee, doing a wonderful job of helping the committee understand the complex projects that are brought to the committee. With our range of different backgrounds, the staff does a wonderful job of kind of bringing everyone together to understand the context and background. I believe in your packet, you do have a copy of our annual report. And so there's a bit more detail in that report, as well as the listing of all the committee members on the back page. So with that, thank you again for just a few minutes of your time, and I'm happy to take any questions, if there are any.
Any questions? I want to be sure and thank you greatly for the work of the committee. For years, it has been an important source of information and coordination for the port. Great. And again, congratulate Mary Helen on her award this past year. So thanks very much for that. And nice to see your other members, Joe, and others in the audience. So thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I need to know if any commissioner wants a presentation on the consent item, which is the Hillsborough Enterprise Zone redesignation, which is described in explained in your materials. Is there any request for? Okay. So motion and second for approval of the consent item.
So move.
Any? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you. So the first agenda item is the work of the advisory group and its selection of our three finalists for the next executive director. And I'm going to describe that process briefly here for you. I know you've heard some or most all of this before. And then in the midst of this presentation, I will also ask those of you who are here to make public comment with regard to that process. We'll take that testimony, and then we will vote on the recommendation that these that we accept the advisory group's recommendation of the three finalists. As approved in January of this year, the advisory group was made up of 4 commissioners: McDonald, Taruta, Alexander, and Levy. And 4 community leaders and representatives, and those folks were Andrea Durbin, who is the executive director of the Oregon Environmental Council, John Mollis, who is the retired head of the building trades here in Oregon, Andrew Colas, who is president of Colas Construction, a minority-owned business, and Catherine Lamb, owner of with her husband of Bambusa Restaurants, also a minority-owned business. These 4 represented a broad range of leadership in business, community, labor, education, and environmental interests. They reviewed resumes of multiple applicants, which were coordinated and provided by our outside recruiters, McDermott and Bull, and interviewed 8 of those applicants, and then recommended 3 finalists to us. And those folks are Jonathan Daniels, Stephanie Dawson, and Curtis Robinhold. And those finalists will be interviewed by the full commission this afternoon in what's called executive session. As a consequence of, and that means the media is invited to attend but not report out on the specifics of those discussions. After completing that process, then we have a special meeting set for the 23rd of May, which will be for the purpose of hearing any additional comments from the public, and then voting. The commission will vote on the actual candidates with the finalists and the new executive director being selected at that time. So we have also had two separate periods of public input through social media, and as a consequence of that input, a couple of members of our advisory group have worked with Bobby Stedman here to synthesize those expressions of interest and concern into questions that we'll be asking this afternoon of the candidates to be sure that the public's expressed interest is included in the questions that we ask. I want to also thank especially Bobby Stedman, who is not here today, but is traveling on a vacation. But I think either, I'm not sure in this meeting if she's on the phone, but will be in the interviews this afternoon. She has done a terrific job of making sure that we as commissioners have heard also the input of our employees here at the port, which are obviously greatly interested in the outcome of this selection of a candidate for the new executive director. With that, if there is any comment by commissioners at this point, feel free to provide that, and then I'll open this to a public hearing and invite those who have signed up to speak. So any commissioners? Okay, this is just about the process to get us to the three finalists. So I would then ask for public comment, and those who have signed up, Bob Salinger, come on up and provide us with your comments, and appreciate your engagement in this, and know you've made some written comments. So,
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the conservation director for Portland Audubon Society. We have 17,000 households as members in the Portland metropolitan region. I've testified before you previously on this issue. We were disappointed that there was not a opportunity for the public to meet the candidates. We felt that was tremendously important. We also felt that was reflected in the comments that you received from the public about the process. And while at the last meeting I was told that, well, you've met all the obligations and maybe gone beyond them, I don't think that's the question that you should be asking. I think the question that the port should be asking as a public agency is, how do you best serve the community? What process is best going to serve the community that you serve? Not how do we meet the letter of the law or the basic requirements. And so we were disappointed. Audubon Society of Portland and Willamette Riverkeeper chose to conduct our own interviews. We invited all three candidates to do that. We would have held a big public forum if we could have. There wasn't adequate time. There was only 14 days provided for public comment. So we did what we could during that time period. We'd hoped to put those interviews up online. Unfortunately, one candidate did not give us permission to do that. And another, we had some significant technical glitches. So we decided, in fairness to the three candidates, that did not make sense to just put up one that was fully functional. We did submit 6 pages of comments. We hope you have those. We were disappointed to see that those were not in the packet. We had hoped to see our comments as well as everybody else's in the packet. That's a matter of transparency. They are a matter of public record. They should have been in the packet today for the press to see, for the public to see. And I hope you all truly do have them. If you don't, I brought them. We put a lot of work into this. We hope you have had the opportunity to read them. We feel like the public should have had the opportunity as well by this point in the process. And we're not sure why they weren't put online. You did put the original comments in the packet the last meeting that fed into the job description. We were pleased that all three candidates agreed to meet with us. We did it via Skype. We thought those interviews were useful, that the candidates were candid, and that it was very effective in starting a dialogue that I think will help whatever candidate ultimately is selected and also help us. We just wish the broader community could have been engaged, not just two groups. But we do think it set a foundation and helped us understand the candidates better, much better than we would have been able to with the very limited information that was provided by the port. I'm not going to give you the details of what we wrote. You have 6 pages of comments. I will say that, you know, all the candidates are impressive in their own right. We found them candid and forthcoming. We found all of the interviews useful. We list some strengths and some weaknesses. One general comment is that none of them did strike us as change agents. They all struck us as very much inside the port box, inside port culture. And it was disappointing that there were no candidates that were really outside the box, in our opinion. And that's something that I think is unfortunate, especially given some of the candidates we know applied and were not forwarded as finalists. The other thing I would note is that only one of the three candidates actually had questions for us. We gave all three candidates the opportunity to ask us questions. We did take the time to interview them. That, to me, is a little bit of a red flag. I always expect candidates for any position to have questions, but I think especially when the public comes to you and says, hey, we're going to take the time to do our own interviews, I would have hoped that all three would have had questions for us about our interests in the community in general. Only one took advantage of that, and you can read which one that was in our comments. Two other things very quickly. I will say that I continue to find this process hostile to public participation. And I know there's disagreement on this board about that, but I'll point out two things to you. The first is the chair of this board was quoted in the paper as in the editorial page as saying there was no point in having that public forum because it would just allow the loudest voices to speak and that wouldn't be useful. That's a heck of a quote, and I fundamentally disagree with that. I think the loudest voices actually will speak. Organizations like Audubon have the capacity to come here and tell you what we think. I think what you actually do when you make comments like that is you marginalize the people with less ability to reach out and less confidence and less connection. You're not marginalizing the loudest voices. You're marginalizing the marginalized voices by doing that, and it sends a message that the port really doesn't care what the community thinks. A second example, I heard mention of the Port Gateway Globe meeting. We are on Airport Futures. We did have staff in that room that day. And your keynote speaker called out Audubon by name for having the audacity to participate in this process and spend some time on that. Now, I know you don't control your keynote speaker, but honestly, as a public agency, I would have expected that you would have made a statement, nothing to embarrass your speaker, but to say, actually, we do welcome all voices and we do welcome Audubon. We were there because we serve on the Airport Futures Committee. We served on the process that created that. We serve on lots and lots of your committees. And we expected to have a bigger voice in this process. We do feel marginalized. And I think those kind of comments, and they happen way too often with the Port of Portland, send a message that you are actually hostile to public participation. You do not welcome groups. You do not welcome dissenting views. And that you want to tightly control these processes. So, you know, I'll end there, but it has been a disappointing process. We hope you do read our comments. If you don't have them, I'm happy to leave them here with you today. But the message, I think, is unfortunate. It sent a message, I think, to the candidates that the public doesn't matter, and I think it sends the message to the public that our voices don't matter as well. And I hope that the interviews we did will start to remedy that in some small way. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Before you leave, just one observation back. All of the comments are in the packets that the commissioners have, including your letter. And it was a very thoughtful letter. Appreciate that. The Oregonian interview and editorial comment, which was about me, was somewhat out of context that I had explained the process that we had followed, which I had also explained to you earlier in terms of in the advisory group, getting a broad leadership perspective, because obviously everybody doesn't sit in this room. And finally, we do very much appreciate the comments of the public, including the Audubon Society. And I think you've done a lot of work, that turns out will be helpful. And, so thank you for that. So any other comments or questions of Mr. Salinger?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll also have Jeff Chattleton?
Chatterton.
Sorry. And with Unite Here.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Jeff Chatterton, spelled as if I talk too much, so I'll try not to do too much here. I'm a shop steward here at the airport. Recently, we won our first contract, making real changes to our wages, having access to better and more affordable health care, and a pension for our workers. Many new rights to continue to improve our job. This means that I will no longer have to choose between insuring myself or insuring my four-year-old, who's in the back right now, daughter Lila. It also helped my family because, like many airport workers, my rent's almost increasing to 20%. It's about $200 a month this year, and knowing I have set secure raises is something I haven't had before. You will make a decision regarding new leases at the airport in the coming months. My family here from Rogan Roses are facing the loss of their jobs. With the loss of their jobs, they will also lose their health benefits, their newly won worker rights, such as fair scheduling and the ability to speak up at work. This is not an abstract decision. Van and Santana are here because they don't know what their future looks like, and they will lose everything they have built here at the airport. Van and Santana have worked at PDX for over 10 years now. Only 13 people received benefits under the Worker Retention Incentive of the Workplace Initiative. Van has gone through this before when the port decided to close Gustav's. While Van was able to keep his job, the majority of his workers were not so lucky. The Port of Portland has to do better for workers. Look us in the eye and tell us that we don't deserve better than being replaced by a nicer concept or having wages and benefits slashed by a new employer coming in. There are many common sense things you can do to protect workers, but so far you're choosing not to. This may be America's best airport, and I enjoy working here, but it's not always the best airport for workers.
Questions? Comments?
I missed. Who was the contract with, your first contract?
We had our first contract with World Duty Free Group.
How long did it take you to reach a settlement?
That was...
We negotiated three times, but it was about a three-year campaign. Just on
yeah, it was about 3 years.
Start to finish.
That's a lot of work. Thank you very much.
Other questions? We will continue to work with you through our staff, which is sensitive to workers and their retention and their placement, and we'll do our best. So thanks for your comments.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. So I do need a motion and second now on the recommendation to accept the recommendation of the advisory group.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. So that motion carries. Cindy, it's budget time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This agenda item requests that the Commission, acting as the Port of Portland's Budget Committee, approve the fiscal year 2017-18 budget and authorize its submittal to the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission. The Port's budget, developed in conjunction with our strategic plan and business plans, provides the best estimate of the resources and requirements needed to meet the Port's mission. Compared to the proposed budget that was presented to you last month, the budget submitted today reflects refinements to some of our operating revenue and expense projections, as well as refinements to our grant and capitalized labor forecasts. Suzanne Kenny, who is Director of Budget and Financial Operations, will present this agenda item.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As Cindy noted, this agenda item requests Commission approval of the Port of Portland's fiscal year 2017-18 budget and authorization to submit it to the Tax Supervising Conservation Commission. And as Cindy noted, the budget provides a funding plan for actions that have been approved by the Commission and for planning purposes, initiatives, and actions that may require further Commission review and approval prior to implementation. So to recap where we're at in the public process of our budget development review and adoption, We began the process at a public hearing last month on April 12th. On June 14th, following the commission meeting, staff and commissioners will meet with the TSCC for their review and public hearing on the port's budget, and we expect to receive their approval of our budget. And then finally, on June 22nd, following the TSCC's approval, we'll request that commission formally adopt our fiscal year 2017-18 budget. So following the first budget hearing last month, we've made some refinements and adjustments to the budget. Exhibits to the agenda item in your packet outline those changes. The primary drivers of the changes between the proposed budget and the budget submitted to you today include refinements in three areas: revised estimates of operating revenues and expenses, revised timing of some of our grant estimates, and revised capitalized labor in support of the PDX Next capital program. So we'll start with the general fund. The changes to the general fund are minimal and are addressed in the agenda item and reflected in the associated exhibits. However, when accounting for these changes on an operating cash flow basis and rounding to millions, these changes are too small to be reflected on the chart shown above. The operating cash flow projection for the general fund remains a little over $9 million, and this cash flow, combined with our property tax and grant resources, along with general fund cash balances, will fund our fiscal year 18 capital program. I'd like to point out that the capital budgets included in fiscal year 18 for the general fund and PDX are the anticipated capital expenditures for fiscal year 18 only. So as you know, some of our capital projects spans multiple years and have expenditures in prior and future years, but the capital budgets you see for fiscal year are the expenditures anticipated for fiscal year 18 only. So taking a look then at PDX, the changes include some refinements to our operating revenues. We've decreased approximately $300,000, and this is a result of lower airline share of operating and maintenance expenses. So given the residual or cost recovery nature of our airline operating and lease agreement, lower airline expenses result in lower revenues required to cover those costs. So while the airline share of the operating expenses have decreased slightly, the overall operating expenses for PDX have increased approximately $300,000. And this is a net result of revised operating and maintenance expenses associated with the new rental car, a quick turnaround facility, which is part of the PDX port cost center and not the airline's responsibility. In addition, we've also made some revisions with respect to the timing of some of our air service marketing support and revised estimates of the administrative costs in support of the PDX Next capital program. So the combination of these refinements result in a decrease operating cash flow of approximately $600,000. However, the $26.4 million cash flow projection, along with our grant resources, our PDX, or our passenger and customer facility charges, our future bond issues, and existing cash balances in the airport funds remain adequate to meet our ongoing capital requirements. I should also note that the cash flow generated at PDX is limited to capital improvements within the aviation system. And finally, I did want to mention that in addition to the public hearing that was held on the port's budget in May, we also reviewed the PDX proposed budget with the Airport Airline Affairs Executive Committee, and we will be reviewing the approved budget with the full airline group later in June. So none of the changes shown today reflect significant changes in our strategic or business plans. These refinements are primarily refinements and adjustments to reflect updated and better forecasts. So with that, staff requests approval of the executive director's recommendation.
Any questions or comments?
I do have a question, and it's more just a part of my learning curve. There have been a number of large projects over the past year where there has been an approach to the commission to do a change order or reassign some of the costs to shift. Given the fact that some of these are multi-year capital projects, how has that variance been managed? I mean, is it covered through contingency, or is there a bit of a cushion, an anticipated cushion, to sort of plan for the unexpected, but just because there are major projects on the horizon.
Right. Actually, it's a combination of both. We do have some flexibility with contingencies to help cover costs that we might not be able to mitigate or absorb in the regular line item budgets. Our capital budgets in particular are usually a little bit on the higher side. Local budget law requires that we, you know, stay within our appropriations. So we usually budget a little bit on the higher side. We end up spending about 85% probably on average of our capital plan. But we do have the ability, if something, you know, very large were to come up during the year, to come to you with a supplemental budget to account for that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Did you get the answer you were looking for?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Any other comments? Is there a motion and second to approve the budget?
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thanks for your work.
Great. Thank you, Suzanne.
And your whole group. And Cindy, you're doing the audit services presentation here with Bob. Good morning.
Good morning.
Commission policy requires the port to solicit for an independent auditor at least once every 5 years. The fiscal year 2016 audit, which was concluded in October, marked the end of our most recent five-year contract for audit services. Bob Burkett, our controller, is here today to request your approval of a new audit services contract with Moss Adams LLP.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So this item requests approval to...
This item requests approval to retain Moss Adams LLP as the port's independent auditor and to enter into a five-year audit services contract with Moss Adams to conduct the required independent audits of the port's financial records for fiscals 2017 through 2021. As Cindy mentioned, commission policy requires the port to solicit for independent audit services at least every 5 years. The audit of the port's fiscal 2016 marked our fifth and final year under our most recent contract, and as a result, we issued an RFP, receiving six separate proposals in response. The first year fees associated with those proposals ranged from $205,000 to $440,000 and took into account 500 hours of audit support to be provided by our internal audit department. By way of comparison, the audit fee for the 2016 audit was $289,000. The proposals were reviewed, and three firms were selected to be interviewed by a team comprised of the port's internal audit director, accounting manager, and controller. The proposals were evaluated on criteria including stability, quality control, independence, local team national office interaction, and demonstrated experience in performing audits for similar entities, qualifications and experience of personnel to be assigned to the audit, the approach taken to managing and performing the audit, cost, sustainability, and small business participation. So after a very competitive process, the evaluation team determined that Moss Adams best met these criteria and recommends they be appointed as the port's auditor. In particular, we saw a significant benefit to Moss Adams' regional presence, as well as their experience with other Pacific Northwest governments, such as the City of Portland, Port of Seattle, Portland and King County Metro, Seattle and Tacoma Public Utilities, Multnomah and Clackamas Counties, and TriMet. Under the proposed five-year contract, Moss Adams will provide an independent audit and opinion on the port's financial statements, a single audit and report on federal grants, a passenger facility charge audit and report, required state and federal data forms, as well as the required communications with port management and the commission. Fees under the proposed audit services contract are $206,250 for fiscal 2017 and $212,550 for fiscal 2018. Audits for fiscal years 2019 through 2021, those fees will escalate based on the consumer price index. And the fees are reflective of the utilization of 500 hours of port internal audit staff time during the course of each year's audit. Staff requests approval of the executive director's recommendation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions?
Just a comment.
Please.
Okay. Number one, I have a lot of experience with Moss Adams, and I think they're very highly regarded specialist. I just can't say enough about them. And I'm
great.
You know, I think the value that you're getting is the price is very, very low, which means you've done a lot of work internally to make it an easy audit by doing a lot of work in the preparation. So
we certainly hope so.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Just quick, is this a five-year review?
So it's a five-year contract for five annual.
I have not finished my question yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is there, I understand that part, but is the this the auditor, independent outside auditor, rotation every 5 years? Is that the required by law?
No, it's not required by law.
Oh, you could have chosen the Price Waterhouse as well, right?
Correct.
So, but was that firm also one of those several? I guess the submitters of the proposals?
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm. You know, whenever the price goes down, it kind of worries me, but maybe that's the reason.
Don't you know, have to be worried.
So after her speech, I'm not concerned. But,
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say there's certainly a catch-up mm-hmm. moment that I assume is priced in there, but Moss Adams is a very well-respected regional. I mean, it's mostly a regional firm, I think, as opposed mm-hmm. to a national firm. But they've been around for a long time, and they do good work. So other comments, questions? Is there a motion and second?
Second.
All those in favor of the recommendation?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Stan, we've got a procurement contract for a steel dredge discharge pipe, and you and Tanya are presenting.
Yep. The Port of Portland's Dredge Oregon transports dredge material to various disposal sites along the Columbia River using steel dredge pipe. The pipe is constructed of rolled steel plate, which wears thin over time due to the abrasive material that's being dredged. This procurement will provide 2,640 lineal feet of pipe to replace those sections which are beyond their useful life. Under our agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers, the cost of this procurement to the port will be reimbursed by the Corps over its seven-year depreciable life. Tanya Starr, Senior Facilities Engineering Manager, is here to present the recommendation.
Thank you, Stan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Today, I'm requesting approval of a procurement contract to Thompson Metal Fab in the amount of approximately $885,000 for the fabrication and delivery of 2,640 lineal feet of dredge discharge pipe for the Navigation Division. This request is part of the port's ongoing program of replacing equipment that's past its economic useful life. And this contract will provide 1,680 lineal feet of pipe, which will become part of the floating discharge pipe that you see in the picture above. In addition, it will provide 960 lineal feet of flange pipe, which will replace the current submersible pipe. This pipeline actually appears to disappear in the image at the upper right above and allows the passage of river traffic while the dredge continues to operate. This section demonstrates how the submersible discharge pipe is constructed below the surface. The budget is as stated in the written agenda, and as previously stated, approximately $885,000 for the contract, with an additional $290,000 for port staff, contracted services, and crew labor. The project also includes an approximate 6% of contingency, which is appropriate for this type of project. And as stated, the project will be funded by the general fund and reimbursed by the Army Corps of Engineers. The schedule is also as in the written agenda, and we can see the commission action today. The pipe will be scheduled to be delivered no more than 250 calendar days from the issuance of the contract. And with that, staff requests the approval of the executive director's recommendation.
Questions? Comments? So we just had a presentation this morning on in the officers meeting on public contracting. Mm-hmm. And if we take this, for example, did you yourself do the search for or do the request for a proposal from the various providers?
No, it was actually a member of my staff that unfortunately was unable to present today.
No, that's fine. You've done a nice job of presenting, but just a curiosity and maybe educational for all of us here on the commission. Mm-hmm. But when you do that, do you make a positive effort to reach out into the community to see what the variety of potential applicants might be, or that you'd have to encourage some, perhaps minorities or other contracting companies?
Yeah, there's quite a bit the port does in its procurement processes in general. For instance, we have an online bid system, Planet Bids, where when we meet with people, we encourage them to the different vendors to put their information into the system so that they're automatically notified of all procurements the port has going on that fits their business profile. So that's one avenue. The other, on some of this stuff like the dredge pipe, sometimes we actually give people calls to let them know, because there's very few firms. We want to make sure that we're going to have adequate an adequate number of people responding to our request. This was a hard bid item, so it wasn't an RFP, so it was a low bid procurement, and so we don't get a lot sometimes on some of these. I think we had three.
I think six this time.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Last time we only had like three, but we really do try to get the message out. But so
part of the reason for my question is, as I described earlier with the advisory group, and as I was working with different people in the community who might be part of that group, I did get feedback on the contracting business for, you know, reluctance maybe to even make the effort to apply, not because they felt the port was discriminating against anyone necessarily, but that they needed that extra kind of attention or push or encouragement to make the application. This may be a bad example. I'm not saying this is it, but just to let it be known from the commission's perspective, and I'm sure I'm joined by the other commissioners here, that we may have to take an affirmative step. I know we do, and it's just a continuing effort to take that initiative to make sure that we're reaching out into the community. So, you know, just my comment, but
we also, Jim, just to let you know, we also had it was a small business event, boy, what was it, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, where we invited a lot of the small businesses here where they could actually meet with our project managers and procurement staff. And we held an event in this room, and then held an event out in the atrium so that they could actually talk with the different people here at the port involved.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And encouraged them also to get in the system, because mm-hmm. that's really how we get our messages out about our procurements. So there's quite a bit that goes on.
Yeah. I just one other observation. I know also from this process, there's a both weekly, I think, and monthly meeting of minority contractor mm-hmm. groups, a coffee, whatever, that we're part. So great. So we participate in those as well.
Yeah.
Offsite. Yeah. Great.
Correct.
Okay. So is there a motion to approve? Second? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks for your presentation. Vince, public improvement contract for Basin 7 stormwater treatment.
Good morning. We're here to request a public improvement contract for the Basin 7 stormwater treatment facility, which places treatment vaults at PDX. In 2015, we completed a comprehensive stormwater master plan, and through the plan, we've developed a 20-year capital improvement program, which includes 10 different stormwater treatment facilities that remove pollutants from stormwater runoff prior to entering the downstream water bodies. We have a commitment and an obligation through one of our stormwater permits, what's called the MS-4, which is issued by the Environmental Protection Agency, and we're a co-permittee with the City of Portland, and so we're required to provide stormwater treatment in order for us to do development here at the airport. Anytime we develop new or redevelop old facilities, at the airport here, and anything that impacts the surfaces, it triggers the obligation to add stormwater treatment structures. The size and the timing of these activities drives the need for the installation of the treatment facilities. So today, here's the first of these new capital projects that you'll be seeing over the next few years. The Basin 7 project was selected first because it has one of the highest pollutant loads in it. And this project will meet part of our MS4 permit by treating runoff from 45 acres of impervious surface that was previously not treated. And then it captures runoff from an additional 78 acres, which will allow the port to provide advanced treatment for some of the future 10 facilities. And Chris Edwards is here to provide the detail on it.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Vince. So today I'm requesting approval to award a construction contract to Goodfellow Brothers for the Basin 7 Stormwater Treatment Facility in the amount of a little over $2 million. Oh, you bet.
There's the microphone. There you go.
Is that better now? Okay, thank you. So this shows the overall basins here at PDX. And as Vince mentioned, as we develop and redevelopment occurs here at PDX, we have an obligation to provide for stormwater treatment. This not only meets in our permitting requirements, but it also keeps in alignment of the port's commitment to the environment. As Vince mentioned, we have the Stormwater Master Plan that did identify 10 projects as part of a capital improvement program, and the Basin 7 project is the first of that one. And it is shown here in the yellow, and it will treat that area identified in the blue, which is a little over 120 acres. This project was prioritized, again, based on its benefits, and future projects will be prioritized by those items outlined in your agenda. This shows the overall project schedule. The item bolded on your left is the item before you today, and this project is anticipated to be complete with construction at the end of October of this year. The Goodfellow Brother contract is what's before you today. Port staff and contracted services cover such items as the in-house engineering, project management, inspection, testing, things of that nature. And the contingency is 10%, which is prudent given the complexity of this project, and it is funded out of the Airline Cost Center. Staff requests approval of Executive Director's recommendation.
Questions? Is there a motion and second to approve the recommendation? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Chris. Thanks,
Vince.
So the next item requests approval of findings and an exemption from competitive bidding to allow the use of a competitive RFP or request for proposal process to award a contract for design and construction of a new automated parking guidance system for the short-term parking garage. The existing system, which was one of the first ones in the United States, is really at the end of its useful life. There are many more providers that play in this competitive space today. So for us, we found that a competitive RFP would result in substantial cost savings and some other benefits for the port and would not encourage favoritism or diminish competition. And Alan DeKeesians, our project manager, he's here to present the recommendation.
Thank you, Vince. Good morning, everybody. I'm here today to request your approval for an exemption from competitive bidding so that the port may utilize a competitive RFP to procure a new automatic parking guidance system for the short-term parking garage here at PDX. Just to make sure everyone's on the same page, the short-term garage, we also call it P1. It's the one closest into the terminal. A little bit of background for you to expand on what Vince has already mentioned. The parking guidance system that we have installed in P1 was installed in 2007, so it's roughly 10 years old. It covers levels 3 through 6, so not the entire garage. Since installing it, we've been very pleased with the benefits delivered. The system obviously reduces the amount of time and fuel wasted by our customers when they arrive at PDX. It helps them find a spot easily, lowers their blood pressure a little bit, and just delivers a much better customer experience. It also improves our parking management staff's ability to manage the garage, to know when it's reached its capacity, and to help direct people to the proper level to park. Unfortunately, the sensors, the the devices with the red and green lights that tell you whether a stall is occupied or not, they're failing. They get moisture in them, and they're failing at a fairly high rate. And the system at this point, being 10 years old, is obsolete. It's no longer being manufactured. Therefore, the reason for the project to replace it. A little bit more background here on the direction we think we're headed. The state of the art now in parking guidance systems is camera-based. So rather than just a sensor that uses an ultrasonic beam to detect whether a car is there or not, the current technology is based on cameras that can also recognize the license plate for the vehicle in the individual stall. This technology offers lots of potential benefits. What you see here on the slide is a cell phone app whereby a customer could enter their license plate number and be given a map to exactly where their car is parked. So again, from a customer experience point of view, if you've ever come back from a trip and not really remembered where your car is parked, this kind of a tool would just be phenomenal. Another benefit is potentially the, I see a lot of smiles, that's great. Another great benefit is that we, unbeknownst to a lot of people, we have to create a license plate inventory in our garages and on all our parking facilities on a nightly basis. So this entails people driving around with little tablets recording the license numbers in every stall, which is tremendously labor intensive. Obviously, with the camera system, you take a picture, you do a little license plate recognition, and now you've automated that process. So the potential for labor savings is pretty huge. I'm actually not here to sell you on the project. I'm here to present the option of using a competitive RFP. So to talk to you a little bit about the competitive RFP process. Step one is for staff to select the most appropriate procurement process. There's an array of different tools we have available to us. Based on the technological complexity of this project, it's basically an IT project that is in the cloak of a construction project. Staff in combination between engineering and contracts and procurement and legal decided that a competitive RFP would be the smartest way to procure it. And that is all detailed in your agenda item and in the findings that were attached to that. Step two, the findings. Again, we did a thorough process to document why we wanted to use a competitive RFP. All of that was reviewed internally. We had a public meeting at which we received no comments. So we proceed to step three, which is where we are today, here to request your approval for this exemption from the requirement for competitive bidding. Pending your approval, the next step would be to publish an RFP and to solicit proposals from the manufacturers that are in this market and to do a thorough evaluation to make sure we pick the right system for PDX. To augment what Vince said earlier, the findings I think are very important. We've documented that this process will not influence selection in terms of favoritism. There will be no favoritism. We'll actually encourage more proposals because proposers will have the flexibility to present what it is that they offer. We also believe there's significant cost savings in using this process. We're going to avoid some duplication in design efforts that typically happens with the competitive bid approach. And there are multiple benefits to the port. Again, all in your findings. Schedule shows us today requesting the exemption from competitive bidding requirements, and if everything flows as planned, we should have the system up and running by the end of next year.
Questions?
I'm just curious if everybody knows why we do the evening inventory of all license plates in the garage.
Thank you. I was going to ask.
It's because people will show up the next day at the toll booth and say, oh, I lost my ticket. And I was just here yesterday, and we look at the record and go, oh, you were here yesterday and the day before and the week before, and it happens with great regularity. And now that all happens by hand, literally by hand. Little trucks on every floor, every day, record that, and now this will allow us to automate it. And that's could be a huge amount of money, right, over time.
So these unique things like moisture in Portland, like good things to try and anticipate in the new system.
Absolutely. In fact, the first step of the process, once we award a contract, would be to install a small trial system. So we're going to have the manufacturer, even though we've done an evaluation, a thorough evaluation, and a site visit of existing installations. We plan to have them install about 10 of these cameras so we can check them out, put a hose on them, make sure the water doesn't get inside the cameras.
So this, the 10-year life, though, is probably predictable that we're, technology being what it is, we're going to be moving on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very nice to have a system.
Good.
As a user.
Yeah.
And back in the day, Scheidt & Bachmann, who's our current provider, was really about the only provider. And so we were somewhat at the mercy of them as system upgrades. And now you see these in lots of other places, not just airports. And so there's a lot more competition. And so we think we're going to get a lot of really good bids and different technologies.
We visited their factory. Steve Schreiber, who was then the aviation director, and I visited their factory in this little tiny village in Germany, classic old kind of Willy Wonka-like factory. And when we went inside, you could see ticket machines for applications all over the world, transit, airports, et cetera. And they were kind of it at the time. And I guess I would just say proved challenging to work with, because these are not just construction projects, and it's not just infrastructure, a lot of IT. They have to integrate with our systems, and it has been more of a challenge than it should be. But now there are just so many more vendors out there.
So I need to go ahead, Greg.
I had a question. Yeah. The vendor that would supply these, would they also do the installation of the new product?
Yes, we're proposing, we're soliciting a contract for the design of the system, furnish of the equipment, and the installation, along with all the programming and testing that goes with that. So it's a single contract. How they arrange their team, whether they subcontract out various pieces of it, we're not telling them how to do that. If the prime contractor is not an electrical contractor, for example, they'll subcontract that portion of the work.
Is there infrastructure already in place that can be reused, or have you identified that?
All right. Yes, we're a lot of the IT connections and the power, the basic power that's required to operate the system, is already there, and we can salvage a lot of that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you. Great.
I have an additional question. What about the ongoing maintenance and the upgrades, the software upgrades over the lifetime of the
product? Great question, and that's part of the reason, the rationale for the RFP approach. We want to evaluate that thoroughly. It's difficult to do in a low bid scenario. The port has a very capable electrical staff, so we maintain the hardware in-house. Mm. Right, so all of the calibration and basic service of the hardware is done by port electricians. The software, though, is a different animal, and we would anticipate entering into a software support agreement with the vendor so that they can provide us updates as the server operating systems continue to evolve. Your application software needs to evolve with it. They're also, with the camera-based systems, if we go that route, there's some ongoing tuning of the cameras and the license plate recognition. Every time a state comes out with a new license plate format, you've got to adapt your software to that. So there will be ongoing support.
And you have the expertise on staff for the software support and integration to your server system?
Yes, our IT team, also part of Stan's group, is heavily involved in the project. There are several folks that are operationally involved in the existing system, and they are part of our design and RFP and system evaluation process. Ultimately, they inherit the responsibility to manage the IT aspect of a system like that, so we involve them at the very early stages.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Just for me to better understand, this exemption request from a competitive bidding, my experience with the port sitting here has been that even the competitive bidding process, that I think price tag is one of the factors you guys look at.
That's correct.
Right? So what is the big difference between what are you trying to achieve now and the going through the, I guess, ordinary or the existing process whereby the price tag is also just one factor? What tool does this give you in addition to what you already have in the existing system?
Great question. So as part of our proposal evaluation, we will establish criteria. Price will be one of them, but we'll also be looking at the proposer's technical conformance or conformance to our technical requirements, so we can be very specific about how we want the system to function and operate. We can also look into their capabilities and their resources. What we find with these types of systems, in fact, with the Scheidenbachmann system, as Bill alluded, it's an international company, and they don't necessarily have a strong local workforce to provide support. So in the RFP approach, we can evaluate that. We can look at the proposer's local resources. We can evaluate their ability to provide service above and beyond just putting in a system for a low price and then walking away from us. So those are very important factors.
You know, with the earlier contract that you did, the dredge pipe contract, it's essentially a commodity. You know, you look at the price of steel, the cost of rolling the pipe, and, you know, there you have it. And it's a pretty straightforward contract. Here we can look at track record, how they've actually done in other places. Price is going to be important, and we'll probably have a range, I'm sure. But you may not necessarily select the low price on the proposal itself because of these other factors.
So there are additional dimensions here. So
absolutely, yeah. Yes.
I just wanted to understand.
Yep. Appreciate that. Thank you.
So I need to recess the Port Commission briefly here. So we have a contract review board now being called to order. And if there are any comments from the public with regard to this proposal, and not seeing or hearing of any. I need a motion and second for approval of the findings in support of the exemption that's been requested and approval to exempt from competitive bidding the public improvement contract for the PDX P1 parking guidance system replacement.
I move.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries, so the exemption is granted. And the review board is now adjourned and commission's back to order, but our business is finished. So
thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Pardon? Oh, yeah, we will be reconvening an executive session at 11:30. Yeah, 11:30. Okay, terrific. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for being here.